From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! They're against free trade and corporate domination, but should left-wing and right-wing populists join forces? That's the question being asked about a new radio network.
I am not interested in taking seriously anyone that engages in labels such as xenophobia. That is, you know, that's beyond the bounds. I'm happy to argue the issues, but I'm not willing to tolerate that kind of mudslinging.
Well, I don't think it's mudslinging. I've read your book. I have it on the table in front of me. I think it's xenophobic. I don't think it's,
what
you know...
What is wrong with criticizing former government officials who go to work for the other side, taking, quite literally, hundreds of thousands of dollars to undo...
Plus, union members explain why they support the founding of a new Labor Party. Coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now!, Pacifica Radio's daily grassroots election show. I'm Amy Goodman. To the chagrin of many pro-choice Republicans, Bob Dole says he wants the anti-abortion plank to remain in the Republican platform. But he does add that a declaration of tolerance should be added so those who disagree feel welcome. The Senate yesterday narrowly failed to muster the required two-thirds vote to pass a constitutional amendment balancing the federal budget. Bob Dole pushed the measure with the hopes of delivering himself a victory or a stump speech issue as he leaves the Senate for the campaign trail.
The record of the past 25 years is frustratingly clear. We simply cannot rely on statutory changes to get the job done. We need an amendment to the Constitution. Sooner or later, it's going to happen. Maybe when 93% of the American people support it instead of 83. Maybe 103% may support it in some precincts.
But Democrat Paul Wellstone of Minnesota pointed out the hypocrisy of some balanced budget supporters.
The same people that want to cut financial aid to higher education, cut educational opportunities for children, cut into Head Start, cut into job training, want to go $70 billion more for Son of Star Wars, and want to spend $11 billion more above and beyond that $70 billion than the Pentagon even wants.
Republicans plan to bludgeon the Democrats and President Clinton with the balanced budget issue in the fall elections. The Pentagon will release its official report today on the cause of the Air Force plane crash over Croatia in April that killed Commerce Secretary Ron Brown and 34 others. Defense Secretary William Perry said yesterday that pilot error and outdated navigation equipment are to blame for the tragedy. A number of Democrats yesterday demanded an apology from House Speaker Newt Gingrich for his comments on the crash, repeated here on the House floor by Democrat Barney Frank of Massachusetts.
The president and others delayed the announcement of Secretary Brown's death so that they could engage in some manipulation at his office. It is a lie. The speaker, when asked, could provide no justification for it. In fact, we're told in today's paper by the speaker's press secretary that the justification is that there might be subsequent facts. That's a fairly outrageous standard.
A Gingrich spokesperson says the speaker was referring to stories in the Washington Times and the American Spectator, two arch-conservative publications. And fires destroyed a wooden sanctuary on the grounds of a black church in Charlotte, North Carolina. And authorities, wary of the rash of fires at other southern black churches, suspect arson. Several residents saw flames shooting through the Matthews Merkland Presbyterian Church sanctuary roof late yesterday night. The building was empty. The House yesterday approved waivers of federal regulations so that Wisconsin can implement its welfare reform plan. Last month, President Clinton promised to support the Wisconsin governor, Tommy Thompson's plan to subsidize employers and force welfare mothers back to work. But the White House is waiting for the 30-day review period to end before signing off on the plan. Wisconsin Democrat Thomas Barrett chided his colleagues for pushing the issue on the House floor.
They say, well, let's go and let's try to embarrass the president. Let's take the olive branch that he has extended to us, let's break it in half, and let's shove it in his eye. Let's try to make this bipartisan issue a partisan issue. And how do they do it? For the first time in our nation's history, this House of Representatives is considering a standalone bill that will grant a waiver.
The waiver bill must still be taken up by the Senate. A federal judge in Pennsylvania yesterday ruled that prison officials violated the civil rights of death row inmate Mumia Abu-Jamal. Abu-Jamal explained the situation 1 year ago this week in a telephone call from prison after Governor Tom Ridge signed his death warrant.
For the last few months now, what we found out is that no reporter from any agency, newspaper, broadcast employ can come and interview me. I have been under what's called an investigation status, said to have been around to find out whether I was operating a business connected with the writing and the publishing of Live from Death Row, published by Addison Wesley. They've denied all paralegals based upon the fact that they have said they have not graduated from recognized and certified legal teaching institutions and don't have degrees in paralegal science. They have rifled through legal mail from my paid criminal capital case lawyer and from my my legal staff. They have read my legal mail before I've read it. And not only that, they have sent it throughout the Commonwealth.
Prison officials defended their actions on the grounds they were investigating whether Abu-Jamal was conducting a publishing business from prison. Judge Kenneth Benson found the prison warden could refuse paralegal visits but had no right to circulate his mail or prevent interviews with the press. You're listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman, and in just a minute, we're going to be joined by Pacifica National Affairs correspondent Larry Bensky, who's in Cleveland for the founding convention of the Labor Party. But first, a little history. This weekend's convention is not the first attempt to build the Labor Party in the United States. In 1827, the Mechanics Union of Trade Associations formed in Philadelphia, calling for candidates to, quote, pledge themselves to support and advance the interests and enlightenment of the working classes. By 1829, the so-called Working Men's Party had won a number of city and state assembly seats, and chapters sprang up in New York City and other parts of the country. But by the mid-1830s, these parties had all but disappeared. After the Civil War, the National Labor Union, the nation's first labor federation, rekindled political activity among working people. In 1869, Labor Reform Party candidates won a quarter of the seats in the Massachusetts House of Representatives, but fighting between labor and reform groups led to the party's demise within a few years. A decade and a half later, Uriah Stevens founded the Knights of Labor to push for the 8-hour workday and universal education and fight against child and prison labor. The Industrial Revolution was well underway, and Stevens asked, shall monopolists have politics all to themselves? Well, Larry Bensky, it's 1996, and you're in Cleveland for the founding of a new labor party. Tell us what's happening.
What's happening, Amy, is a very large group of people has shown up here in drizzly, summery Cleveland, including representatives of 9 endorsing unions, a couple of dozen locals from other unions that didn't endorse as national unions, and several hundred independent activists of all stripes, several of them sectarian stripes from the various groups on the left over the years that have had contact with or want to have contact with labor union organizing. The total is about 1,400 people who jammed into a basement room of Cleveland's Convention Center yesterday for the opening of Labor Party Advocates Convention here, which will last through Sunday. And what they did yesterday was agree after some stormy debate on rules of how to conduct themselves. There's a draft program, Call for Economic Justice, which is 19 pages and 19 points long, and it's going to be debated starting about now in that convention center for the next couple of days. And they hope, when this is all over, to have a national party that will be a political party. And two of the people who are active in trying to make that happen are with me here today in the studios of radio station WCPN in Cleveland. Kit Costello is president of the California Nurses Association. She's from California, of course, Sacramento. She has 17 years' experience as a professional nurse, and her nurses union, California Nurses Union, is one of the 9 endorsing national unions behind the Labor Party Advocates Convention. Also with me here is a representative of an endorsing local. He's a Teamster. The Teamsters nationally are not one of the unions that endorsed this convention, but several dozen Teamster locals are here and represented. And Jerry Zero is a 26-year veteran truck driver from Chicago who is now a Secretary General of... That's not the right title, is it, Jerry?
No, it's Secretary Treasurer.
Thank you very much. Secretary General works at the United Nations. Secretary General of Teamsters Local 705 in Chicago. Welcome, both of you, to Pacifica Radio. Let me ask you first both a question about your personal lives, because we have a lot of union members who listen and workers who listen who aren't in unions. People who are in unions, a lot of them aren't union activists. They join unions because they have to, because they want to, whatever reason, but they don't get active in their unions. How did you, for example, Kit Costello, get active in your union, being a registered nurse? What got you started in union matters?
Well, I got started about 10 years ago when I had a baby and a toddler, and I was looking at a child care bill that equaled my house mortgage payment, and so I got interested in trying to find out how I could develop a child care benefit and went to my union and talked to them about writing one, and I did. I developed it, and I took it to the table myself as a member of my negotiating team.
And from there, you found that you liked the political process enough so that you stayed with it and became a union official?
I did. I'm now president.
But you're still a working nurse.
Yes, I am.
Jerry, you're a truck driver, traditionally rather ornery folks, kind of difficult to organize, and the Teamsters especially. You're part of the Teamster reform movement. You were brought in as Secretary Treasurer as part of Ron Kerry's reform of the Teamsters. How did you get from being a truck driver in Chicago into a union activist?
Well, I would say it's about 12 years. I've been pretty active in the union movement in Chicago, and due to the fact that our local was quite corrupt. I was known, of course, as a dissident there, and generally we backed President Kerry when he was running for office of General President of the Teamsters. And in June of 1993, we went into my local 705, and took it over with a trusteeship because of the corruption involved. And as of April of 1995, I ran for office and was elected Secretary Treasurer of that local.
All right, now the key question, we'll get right to it. What is it going to be like for each of you from very different kind of unions, one truck driver Teamsters in Chicago, the other professional nurses in California, to go back to your membership if a Labor Party does emerge from this weekend here in Cleveland and say to them, we got a political party now? Kit? What is that going to mean?
Well, I think for us, for nurses, we've always understood the values of the social factors involved in health, like a living wage, adequate shelter and housing, and access to health care. So for us, it's natural that we would have a political party that would embrace and work actively through new politics to make that happen. So we think it fits very well with the ethic of our membership.
What are they going to say? Suppose some of them are Democrats, I suppose some of them are Republicans, some are independents, and some don't vote. What are you going to say to them to say, okay, get involved now, this is a new party, this is different? What buttons in them do you think you're going to have to push in order to get them involved?
Well, actually, we're doing that kind of politics already in the state. We've introduced a state ballot initiative put forward by the California Nurses Association that kind of represents the kind of politics that we want to do as a Labor Party, issue-based, that makes politicians respond to serious matters. This initiative would create a medical bill of rights, an independent consumer board, and impose greed fees on an industry that is limiting care to patients while it accumulates incredible profits.
That's something you're looking at for the November ballot in California?
Right.
Jerry, how about you? Is it going to be a hard sell when you go back to Chicago and talk to Teamsters and saying we've got a new political party here?
No, I don't think so. I think our members certainly are aware of the fact that the Democrats and Republicans really haven't given us a damn thing over the years. Our members are certainly interested in a striker replacement bill. They're interested in getting rid of NAFTA and GATT, and these things were just shoved down the working people's throats. And we need a party that will speak for the working people, and we're hopeful that the Labor Party is that party.
Let me ask you both something. Do you envision, with this Labor Party, seeing presidential candidates? I mean, in the past, you had Labor-identified 30-party candidates like Eugene Debs, Norman Thomas. I mean, you had Debs running from his jail cell in 1920 elections. Do you envision something like this in the future?
You might have President Clinton running from his jail cell this year, Amy. We don't know that yet.
I think that's definitely not outside future possibilities. But I think what we're hearing and what will be discussed by the delegates is, do we need to build a mass political mobilization around a issue platform? And that's really critical. You could run candidates now and really not have much control unless you have a huge political base that agrees on principles of social justice. And that's what we're building on, is really building a mass base.
I agree. Certainly, I believe it's a bit premature to run the candidates right now. It takes millions upon millions and millions of dollars to run candidates for any high office, and it could be rushing it too much, and it could really hurt the party more than help it at this time.
One of the things we heard over and over again yesterday, in fact, from speakers at the convention, including Bob Wages, who's kind of taken the lead on this, the president of the Oil, Chemical, and Atomic Workers Union, is that this is a very preliminary step. We're not talking yet about running candidates. We're not talking yet about endorsing candidates. We're talking about a party that's trying to form itself at the grassroots and seeing where it wants to go. Everybody wants to move it real fast, wants to have candidates, wants to have endorsements, wants to have initiatives and something. But Wages and others are saying, we're going to start from the grassroots. How do you two see this grassroots movement building within your union, for example? Where would it start? Kid, would it start with the initiative, trying to get people to vote for it?
Yeah, it'll start with the initiative. But we've also actually done some economic training that through a labor institute, and it was kind of introduced through LPA to my members of my union, and it was extremely valuable for members to begin to educate themselves about basic economics and why working people, you know, are not having their needs met in the current political climate.
Well, we at Local 705 in Chicago have a newsletter. We have monthly steward meetings. Tony Mazzocchi is who is, of course, very responsible for the start of this party. I have spoken at our stewards' meetings. We keep our members informed with mailings, and really they're quite interested in the Labor Party, and I believe it will do nothing but grow in the city of Chicago.
Are you running into the standard question? You know, this is a critical time. The Republicans are a lot less supportive of unions than the Democrats. Can we afford to pull any support away from President Clinton? Is this the standard line of labor activists or union leaders?
Well, I mean, it's a small line. I mean, it's not really a big deal because we have no one running against either party at this time. We simply want labor to have a voice, and if the election were held today, clearly 99% of the people in that hall would probably vote for Clinton. But until such a time as we run a candidate, we want labor's voice heard, and we believe the Labor Party is the way to do it.
What about in Chicago, for example? You have a lot of congressional races that are going to be very closely contested. Let's take former Congressman Dan Rostenkowski's seat. I assume a lot of your members live in that district, and I assume a lot of your members are not happy with Mike Flanagan as their congressional representative, the Republican. So they'll be working for the Democrats this time. Am I correct on those assumptions?
You're absolutely correct.
Okay. What do you do then to shift those people from being militant Democrats who are organizing and working in precincts to being Labor Party advocates, militants, working for that party?
Well, a good many of them are already Labor Party advocates, and I think that the more we're known, and if we come out of this convention with a strong party, a good many of these people are going to shift and become Labor Party advocates. I mean, they're all aware of what people like Flanagan are trying to do to labor, and we're obviously not getting as much help as we would like from the Democrats, so if we have to do it ourselves, we'll do it ourselves.
Well, the issue is very similar to us. I think you have to have existing political candidates and officials responding to your agenda. The fact that single-payer universal access to health care is off the political radar screen, I think, is a real abdication of their responsibility, and they should be forced to respond to those public policy issues.
And that is one of the points on the call for economic justice. It's going to be debated here in Cleveland and probably passed, I would think, without too much dissent, since there seems to be a lot of support for single payer. Amy?
Yeah, we're going to be breaking, and we're going to go back to this conversation. We've been joined by Kit Costello and also Jerry Zero. Kit Costello, president of the California Nurses Association, which has 25,000 members. Jerry Zero, secretary-treasurer at Teamsters Local 705 in Chicago. Larry's with us also, and they're all in Cleveland at the founding convention of the Labor Party. I'm Amy Goodman. We'll be back in a minute, and then we'll talk about a new radio network that is partially supported by the UAW. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman here in Washington. Larry Bensky joins us from Cleveland, where the founding of the Labor Party is happening, a convention this weekend, and we're joined by two guests. Just have a few more minutes with them. Kit Costello, president of the California Nurses Association, and Jerry Zero of the Teamsters Local 705 in Chicago. Larry, what are you expecting to see today? I guess Elaine Bernard, who we had on yesterday, she'll be one of the keynote speakers after lunch.
Right, and Jim Hightower is speaking right now to the opening session, if it indeed started on time across town in the convention center. But what most of today's activity will be, Amy, is a debate and discussion of the call for Economic Justice, the 19-page platform, which has been drawn up by the platform committee and will be debated all day today. And what I wanted to ask Kit here and Jerry, who have read this platform and participated in its formation, how are you going to communicate this to your members? One of the things that a lot of people have commented on already here in Cleveland is the lack of media coverage. Pacifica Radio is the only electronic media that seems to have a representative here. There are some print newspaper reporters, but basically the word on this convention is not going to get out nationwide, except to people who happen to be listening to this program and listen to us again on Monday. If this program platform is adopted, this 19-page platform, how are you going to get the essence of it to your members?
Well, we've always educated our members through our publications and through, you know, general meetings, and we'll continue to do the same. We have a very good record of doing very sophisticated education on the corporatization of healthcare, and including tracking profits and the movement of the industry, so that it fits within our general framework of social justice issues, except it expands it to look at things like livable wage. And we find our members really sympathetic to the issue that we really do need to change our society so it's working to benefit us all.
Jerry, how are you going to get the word out on the call for economic justice if and when it's passed here?
As I said before, our stewards base is really the power of our local, and our stewards are very, very interested and are very much enlightened about the Labor Party. And in the past few days, I have done interviews with Chicago Tribune and the Los Angeles Times that were published about the Labor Party. So there is some word getting out. And as soon as this convention is over, I believe we're going to put on a big push and really inform our members as to what was said at this convention, and they'll certainly be kept up to date.
Plus, I think the new style that we're trying to move to in the Labor Party with issue-based politics can be illustrated by the ballot initiative we've had. And we have extremely, you know, heightened sense of awareness in California as a result of the initiative we placed on the ballot. So we'll continue to do that kind of mass education through the public media.
Well, maybe I'm a little sensitive to the electronic media table being absent. I'm glad to hear there's some print reporters here who are reporting across the country. Kit Costello, president of the California Nurses Association, Jerry Zero, secretary treasurer of Teamsters Local 705 in Chicago. Thank you very much for being with us today on Pacifica. We'll be back on Monday with a report, a full report, as to what happened here, the platform being passed, any resolutions that may be added to it, such structure as may emerge, any officers that may be elected, etc. Amy, we'll have all of that for you on Monday on Democracy Now!
And Larry, I look forward to seeing you in Washington on Monday. Coming up, interesting that Jim Hightower is speaking right now at the Labor Party Advocates Convention, because he's coming up on Democracy Now!
Now, you want higher wages, let me tell you what to do. You got to talk to the workers in the shop with you. You got to build you a union, got to make it strong. But if you all stick together, folks, won't be long. You get shorter hours, better working conditions, vacations with pay, take your kids to the seashore. Course, it ain't quite that simple. I better explain just why you got to ride on the union train. Because if you wait for the boss to raise your pay, we'll all be waiting till Judgment Day. We'll all be buried, gone to heaven. St. Peter will be the straw boss then. Now you know you're underpaid, but the boss says you ain't. Speeds up the work till you're about to faint. You may be down and out, but you ain't beaten. Pass out a leaflet, call a meeting, talk it over.
And this is Democracy Now! If you follow the media much these days, you might notice there isn't a lot of labor reporting anymore. According to a 1994 report from the media watch group FAIR, which is Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, based in New York, mainstream radio and TV networks use only a tiny percentage of their airtime covering unions and issues central to working people's lives. At the same time, corporate-sponsored business programming is increasing, even on so-called public airwaves, so the little bit of workplace reporting reporting that's being done is coming from business reporters with a bias towards management and little knowledge of unions. This interesting note, the History Channel has canceled plans for a series of television profiles on American corporations that the companies were to fund and control themselves. The fast-growing cable network had billed the series The Spirit of Enterprise as an inside look at corporations such as AT&T, DuPont, and General Motors. Advertising Age first published news of the series last week, prompting a flurry of criticism over the network's unusual relationship with the corporations involved. The senior vice president and general manager of the History Channel said yesterday the series was being abandoned because of recent concerns expressed, which suggested the appearance of a lack of objectivity. Well, because of the lack of a labor voice in the press, unions have been kicking around ideas for a cable TV channel or a daily labor paper. Last month, the United Auto Workers took a partial plunge and invested several million dollars for a less than 10% stake in a new radio network called United Broadcasting Network, or UBN. We tried to invite the UAW onto Democracy Now! To discuss the plan, but they didn't return our repeated phone calls. Joining us today is the founder of UBN, Pat Choate, and Jim Hightower, who'll be one of the program hosts. Pat Choate, what can we expect from United Broadcasting Network?
Basically, I think there's a need for additional voices and additional means for Americans to get the news. And so what we've done is taken, formed this network. We're attempting to buy our own radio stations, put up 24-hour programming, and present some balanced commentary for American listeners. And one of those voices is obviously Jim Hightower, who is the leading voice for the progressive political movement in America today. And his is a voice that was on ABC radio, and it's a voice that got silenced, at least on ABC, when it was taken over by the Disney organization. I think that's a shame. We're going to bring that voice back.
Who else is going to be on United Broadcasting Network? We hear Babe Buchanan, for example, Pat Buchanan's sister and campaign manager, Marcy Kaptur, Democratic Congress member from Ohio who opposed NAFTA. Who else do you have lined up?
We'll have Martin Tolchin, who was with the New York Times for 40 years, wrote Buying In to America. We will have Duncan Hunter, a conservative Republican from San Diego who also opposed NAFTA, GATT, and U.S. membership in the World Trade Organization. Our news is going to be provided by United Press International, so we're going to divide commentary from an opinion from news. There'll be a sharp division there. And so basically what we hope to bring is a wealth of news by an independent news organization, and a variety of voices on commentary and opinion.
What about the UAW's role and interest in the creation of United Broadcasting Network?
The United Auto Workers is, of course, one of the major unions inside this country. They were, shocked to see what happened in Detroit when there was a newspaper strike. And they had difficulty even buying advertising time to give an alternative point of view. Big business just flat closed down the media. Their interest was to assist us to provide a new voice. They hold a very minority role in the network. They have no editorial control over the network. But their experiences, I think, demonstrated to them, and I think a recent article in The Nation magazine demonstrates how the electronic media, after the Telecommunication Act, has fallen into fewer and fewer hands. Quite literally, you have many communities where three or four companies will own all of the radio stations, for example.
Who are the other partners, perhaps silent? I know originally I think UAW intended to be a silent partner, but somehow it was leaked that they were one of them.
Well, basically what we have done is try to remove our investors and from any political pressure. They wish to remain silent. A man named Ed Miller and I operate and control the network. Miller was the
founder of the National Center for Manufacturing Sciences. His career has been devoted to bringing manufacturing jobs back to the United States. At the same time, to reduce those pressures, we're not taking ads on this network. We will make our revenues by selling Made in the USA products, products that are made by American workers making a decent wage and operating in safe conditions. And by doing it that way, we're not under the pressure of any major advertiser to take any particular content. We expect to be feisty. We expect when corporations or politicians or others do things that we think are adverse to the American public and to the United States and to citizens, we intend to expose them and to pin them. We will provide also a forum for those companies if they want to make a response. And certainly, since this is going to be a talk radio network, we're going to provide plenty of opportunities for our listeners to join in those discussions and offer their own opinions.
We're talking to Pat Choate. He is the chairman of United Broadcasting Network. I wanted to ask about Ross Perot. You're an advisor to Ross Perot. What is his role in UBN?
Ross Perot is a very good friend of mine. I assisted, I co-authored a book with Ross Perot. He and I worked very hard, unsuccessfully, to defeat NAFTA and then the GATT, but Ross is not an investor in this network, though he does wish us the best.
Well, Jim Hightower, why don't you tell us what your plans are for your show, and when is it going to be starting?
Well, my plans are to, one, have a good time kicking butt of the powers that be, which has been kind of what I do in life. And as Pat indicated, I was doing that to some degree on the ABC radio networks on a weekend talk show that I had there. But when I began to kick the butt of the new owners of ABC, Walt Disney Inc., Mickey Mouse squealed at the top of his little high-pitched voice and said they didn't want that viewpoint anymore. So it's why I admire the effort that Pat Choate, Ed Miller, the UAW, and others are making in this this new venture, a way to separate ourselves from the stifling influence of big corporate advertisers and big corporate owners and be able to get a message out that I know America wants to hear, and that is the message of ordinary working people who are being run roughshod over by the powers that be in this country, and they're wanting to fight back. And so this is a medium that's going to give me a national voice again for me to be able to talk with folks. I indicated, Amy, that we're going to have some fun with it. We're going to, literally to create the Chat and Chew Cafe, right here in Austin, Texas, from where we will broadcast. So it's going to be a pretty laid-back style of show that'll have, you know, my kind of populist take on it and hard-hitting, hard-edged viewpoint and mix it up with callers.
The Chat and Chew Cafe, you mean you're going to be flipping burgers and taking calls?
Well, we don't flip burgers at the Chat and Chew. We cook burgers very thoroughly, and we ease them over, and then we slather them with mustard, and we slather them with fine, ripened, homegrown tomatoes. So it's what it is really we're going to do a coffee shop. It could be a diner. It could be a cafe in Seattle. It could be a southern roadhouse, kind of whatever your imagination wants it to be. But it's going to have that ambience. And, yes, we're literally going to have people be able to come through Austin if they want to and sit in on the show and watch it.
Jim, we ran a speech of yours before when you spoke at the Media and Democracy Congress. We ran it on Democracy Now!, got a lot of response where you talked about being kicked off of ABC by Disney. And when I got a call from a vice president at ABC Network who said that it was just that you couldn't raise the money, I asked, they did concede that you were able to raise labor money, but that they wouldn't take that. Can you talk about the politics of the corporate networks taking advertising dollars from corporations but refusing to take labor money? In fact, I now understand that that's true with PBS as well, public broadcasting.
I hadn't heard that. Well, that's there you go. It just shows the overwhelming pro-corporate bias of the media today. There are those who like to say, well, the media has become right-wing. Of course, there are right-wingers who says it's a liberal institution. The truth is it's neither right-wing nor left-wing. It is overwhelmingly corporate. And they're willing to have all viewpoints discussed on abortion, illegal immigrants, on welfare, on all of those social issues. But when you begin to talk about money and corporate power itself, that's when they shut you off. That's when they pull the plug on your microphone. And as you just indicated, ABC did try, when they bounced me for political reasons, they tried to rationalize it by saying, well, he was not getting advertising. Well, there were two refutations to that. One is we submitted a list of good guy companies like Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream and Working Assets, credit card and phone company that they could have gotten advertising from, but they don't know those companies. They don't know how to go get them. They're not very good at their own business. So, one, they didn't even go to the companies and get advertising revenues, but two, we could have delivered at least a quarter of $1 million a year to them with union ads, and as you say, they're not interested in that viewpoint being expressed on the air, even as a commercial.
Pat Choate, you said you're not going to be taking corporate dollars, or at least corporate advertising dollars. Is it true that all of the people that you have on the network oppose NAFTA? Would you say that's the uniting theme?
I think most of the people on this network, right or left, Republican or Democrat, are economic nationalists that feel that it's essential that we bring jobs back to this country, that we have a trade policy that reflects the needs of the working people, not just the needs of the corporations in this country. So economic nationalism is a major a theme of this network. I would also say, though, our host, and we're saying it to everyone, if you want to criticize corporations, fine. If you want to criticize unions, fine. Just be able to back it up. I mean, there's nothing off-limit on this network.
Well, someone who is certainly an economic nationalist is Chuck Harder. Reports seem to feature him as a key player in the creation of the network. What is his role?
Well, he'll be a host on the network, and he is an investor. He's a minority investor. The reason that I think they focused on Chuck is largely because, as one of our acquisitions, we bought the network he had created, the People's Radio Network, which serves 300-plus affiliates. But what we've also done is we've gone out and we've bought a couple of additional radio stations. We're going to be buying, owning, and operating several of our own stations. We're going to go into a simulcast broadcasting this fall. We're going to be taking all of our shows and putting it up on satellite for cable television. So if you can't visit the Chat and Chew Cafe in Austin, you'll at least be able to see your friends and relatives who drop by there and as you watch Jim and the other shows.
And Chuck Harder will also have a show.
Chuck will have a show from 2 to 5 in the afternoon. Bay Buchanan will have a show. It's our intention to offer 24-hour live programming every day. So at 3 a.m. in the morning, for those people who are up at that hour, and it turns out there are quite a few, if they want to have a lively discussion, they can pick up the phone and join. It's just not reruns.
Well, Pat Choate and Jim Hightower, we're going to be joined by Chip Berlay to talk about the controversy over Chuck Harder after this. Thank you. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. I've been following the controversy over Chuck Harder's involvement in the new radio network UBN, partially funded by the UAW, in the pages of Extra, the newsletter of fairness and accuracy in reporting. Right-wing watcher Chip Berlay wrote a letter to the editor, and Chuck Harder responded. While we couldn't get Chuck Harder on the show, we now have been joined by Chip Berlay, in addition to Pat Choate, who is the man who's running UBN, United Broadcasting Network, and also Jim Hightower. Chip Berlay is author of Eyes Right, and he's with Political Research Associates in Somerville, Massachusetts. Chip Berlay, you've raised serious questions about Chuck Harder. Tell us what your concerns are.
Well, I'm concerned over how one gets around the historic reliance of Chuck Harder on xenophobia and conspiracy theories. Chuck is certainly a very effective radio talk show host, but he has in the past sold from his collection of books material that is, I think, easily described as anti-Semitic and homophobic. He promoted for a long time as an expert on a Federal Reserve, a man named Eustace Mullins, who's a notorious anti-Semite, who talks about how the Rothschild family controls banking and thus the foreign policy of the U.S. So I'm worried when economic nationalism spills over into prejudice and xenophobia and conspiratorial scapegoating, and with a three-hour block from 2 to 5 every day, how does a progressive populist have any kind of antidote to the kind of paranoid conspiratorial worldview of a Chuck Harder?
Well, we took a look at that. The Anti-Defamation League in Florida, who's followed Chuck Harder, took a look, and they said that there was they saw no evidence whatsoever of anti-Semitism as to the question of the various books that are going to be sold. Those books increasingly will be what I think one would consider to be mainstream. We'll be selling books in the Federal Reserve, but it'll be books such as Bill Greider's Secrets of the Temple, which I think was well received. And he's a first-rate author. And as far as the other charges, and the controversy that surrounds Chuck Harder, Chuck will be on the air 3 days a week, and I think he's more than able to deal with those issues. Ironically, at the same time that Chuck, Mr. Berlitz talks about Chuck, his concerns about conspiracy and other theories, Spotlight and the Liberty Lobby have attacked him aggressively, and I must say very viciously and unfairly, as being a tool of the Anti-Defamation League. So he's been attacked, I think, from both sides. All I would say to people is listen and make up your own mind, and if you find him offensive, turn him off. Don't listen to him.
Chip Berlay, do you have any problem with that?
Well, I do, because, first of all, the Anti-Defamation League is just flat-out wrong. I mean, the quite decidedly accurate book, Anti-Semitic Propaganda, an Annotated Bibliography and Research Guide, which is the basic work in the field, lists the material of Eustace Mullins. If you read
Eustace
of the material
Mullins,
that was purchased... Can
Mullins
I finish?
Stuff is not sold by this network.
Can I finish?
No, but I think it's important. You're implying that Eustace Mullins' work is being carried by this network. When
no, I'm not implying
out,
that at all. Listen. Can I finish?
Listen, no, not with a false accusation. Eustace Mullins' work, when Chuck Harder found out about it, it was removed. He didn't sell it. He only had him on the show one time, and he wasn't dealing with anti-Semitic things. I can tell you flat out, that kind of literature is not going to be sold on this network.
Chip Berlay?
The point I'm trying to make, and I'm not implying that Eustace Mullins is on this network, I'm saying flat out that the judgment of Mr. Harder in terms of purveying these conspiracy theories is in question. And it is difficult for me to ignore the fact that right-wing populism often turns into xenophobia. Some of Mr. Choate's own book reviews mention the xenophobia that some of the reviewers found in his work about Japan, so that
yes,
you have Chuck Harder, a person who
you have wound up with.
Can I finish my statement?
That will engage in that. On the other hand, my book was favorably reviewed by both the New York Times Magazine, by the New York Times Daily, by the Los Angeles Press, by the New Republic, and by other reputable publications. You know, I am fully prepared to debate my opinions with anyone. I am not interested in taking seriously anyone that engages in labels such as xenophobia. That is, you know, that's beyond the bounds. I'm happy to argue the issues, but I'm not willing to tolerate that kind of mudslinging.
Well, I don't think it's mudslinging. I've read your book. I have it on the table in front of me. I think it's xenophobic. I don't think it's,
what
you know,
is wrong with criticizing former government officials who go to work for the other side, taking quite literally hundreds of thousands of dollars to undo the treaties that they did? That is what I wrote about. That is the documentation in the back of the book.
That is not xenophobic.
That is good government.
Are you talking about government officials, U.S. government officials, going to lobby for foreign governments?
Absolutely. That's what Mr. Berletz and I are talking about. It's my book, Agents of Influence.
Chip Berletz, what is wrong with saying that?
Well, there's nothing wrong with saying that. And I got to say that the level of intellectual discourse in this discussion is wanting. You know, you cannot simply say that I don't have a right to my opinion. You have a right to your opinion. Congratulations on your good reviews. I've written books that have been reviewed poorly and favorably, and sure. I'm saying my view, having read the book, is that it overemphasizes Japan in a way that I find xenophobic. It's my opinion. You have a right to object. I have listened to dozens of Chuck Harder's radio programs. I have read his newspaper. It is my view that he promotes a kind of conspiratorial worldview that is virtually identical to that of the John Birch Society, which is no surprise because he carried books by people affiliated with and close to the Birch Society. He promotes the idea that secret elites manipulate the country. He promotes the work of Lorraine Day, who writes these kinds of homophobic books about the AIDS is being, you know, allowed to run rampant by a homosexual lobby intent on protecting its rights over the health of America. He purveys these theories about UFOs and aliens. And I find it hard to understand how this is going to put forward the need to confront what we all agree is the rising power of corporations in America. You can attack the power of corporations without relying on these scapegoating conspiracy theories that frequently involve xenophobia and paranoid conspiracism.
Jim Hightower, let me respond to that very quickly. Pat Choate, let me just get Jim Hightower into the conversation. Are the kinds of concerns that Chip Berletz is raising right now, are these issues that you've been thinking about, or would you agree with Pat Choate that these are not Chuck Harder's views?
The degree to which I've been able to check out Chuck Harder, I don't find, you know, and I have asked questions of people in Washington and elsewhere around the country, and I don't find, you know, that this is the core, that anti-Semitism is at the core of his makeup. Having said that, you know, I'm not signing up with Chuck Harder's network. I've signed up with the United Auto Workers and Pat Choate and Ed Miller in a new venture that I think has a life of its own, and Harder is going to have a show on this network. But you know, just as he is not going to embrace my particular viewpoint on everything, neither does it mean I embrace his. I was on ABC. I don't think you get any weirder than Bob Grant, for example, in New York, who continues to have a radio show on a major station in New York City. Rush Limbaugh, G. Gordon Liddy. I mean, you know, the so-called establishment airwaves are full of this kind of right-wing nonsense that's being put out there. What I find on the United Broadcasting Network is an opportunity for me and for Ralph Nader and for Joan Claybrook and people of our progressive viewpoints to be in the political debate for the first time ever. If it comes to having to debate Chuck Harder on some of those issues, then sure, I'm prepared to do that. But most important, I think, is getting a progressive viewpoint for the first time ever out in a consistent way, day in and day out, on a commercial radio network.
Jim Hightower, does it concern you that often populism and economic nationalism comes with a kind of racist bent, or do you find that that's the case?
I don't find it's the case any more in populism than it is in the Democratic or Republican parties. You know, the problem is too many of us were raised reading Richard Hofstadter's, you know, misinterpretation of the whole populist movement. those of us who went to college I'm speaking of here, that his dominant textbook on American political history cast the populace as xenophobes and racists and right-wingers, which was not the case at all. Mr. Hofstadter, you know, met the populace, so-called, in the 1920s, when in fact the real populist movement was in the 1870s and 1880s, that included black, that included unions, that included an urban as well as a rural base. It was one of the only true progressive political grassroots movements in the United States of American history. It is a very, very important, rich, proud, progressive history, and it is out of that actual movement that I spring and that I bring my viewpoint. So, you know, I don't think I have to apologize to Chip or anybody for my viewpoints on race and xenophobia and et cetera. I've been pretty consistent in my criticism of those right-wing viewpoints.
Well, let me ask Pat Choate, who is organizing United Broadcasting Network, are there any people of color who were included in your lineup of radio talk show host personalities?
Not at this point. We have one of our newscasters is, but we haven't completed our schedule at this point. There will be, and obviously there will be women and Hispanics and a group that is reflective of American society and culture today. By the time that we introduce our programming in July, we'll have a very balanced set of personalities and views.
We're talking to Pat Choate, who is the organizer of the United Broadcasting Network, also Jim Hightower, who is going to be one of the main figures, one of the main personalities on the radio. And we're joined by Chip Berlay, who's with Political Research Associates and has been writing some letters of concern about who's involved with this network. Chip, I'm wondering about your response to Jim Hightower. He's saying he doesn't have to agree with everyone who's on the network. He certainly didn't on ABC. Do you have a problem with that?
I don't have a problem with Jim Hightower at all, and I agree with him that he has nothing to apologize for on the issue of being sensitive on racism and anti-Semitism, and he's absolutely right about Hofstadter misinterpreting the populist movement. I mean, Jim and I agree on all of that, and we've talked about how we agree on that stuff, that real good democratic populism, progressive populism, is the antidote for what's wrong. My concern is, If you go on and check the program schedule right now of UBN, it is virtually identical to the People's Radio Network. There are a number of people on the air who have these kinds of Clinton-bashing, conspiratorial kind of worldviews, and I'm worried that the balance is not going to be in favor of working people and progressives, for sure.
When you say Clinton bashing, isn't it as much Dole bashing or anyone else?
No, really. If you listen and you watch what is put out in the various periodicals, it's overwhelmingly pro-right wing, anti-Clinton, and involving all sorts of conspiracy theories about the Clintons, you know, nefarious dealings here and there. It's pretty right wing stuff.
Wait a minute, Pat. We have not introduced our host or our programming yet. That will begin in July.
I'm on the web right now, logged onto your website.
It's on the web. We're changing the program. As I said earlier, we'll be introducing the new programming in July. It will include people such as Marcy Kaptur, I think is considered a progressive voice, Martin Tolchin, a very experienced voice. You'll have Jim Hightower. You'll have Nader. You'll wind up with some different views with Babe Buchanan.
Is Ralph Nader?
A number of commentators.
Pat Choate, is Ralph?
I don't think it's fair at all whatsoever to talk about the old PRN programs and say that that's indicative of what UBN is, because it is not.
Does Ralph Nader have a program on the new network?
Nader is... we're working with Nader to put a program on the air. He's tentatively agreed to join with us.
I talked with him just this last week. Both he and Joan Claybrook, and they are, as is Laura Wallach of the
Citizens Trade One.
Right, she's leading the anti-globalization campaign.
Mm-hmm. She's considering doing a weekend show on trade for the network.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I say is, come back to us in a couple of months, and then take a look at our programming and the content. And let's have another discussion. I think that you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Is corporate America shaking in their shoes right now? Have they responded to...
Well, we've had some murmurs because When we see corporate wrongdoing, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about specific corporations, we're going to talk about their acts, and we're going to talk about CEOs who are very powerful people who do things many times not in the interest of the country, and they do it anonymously. That's going to end.
So, Chip Berlay, are some of your concerns allayed as after listening to this conversation?
Well, I think it's absolutely fair to ask for people to withhold judgment until the final product is aired. But no, in fact, obviously, I'm co-writing a book with Matt Lyons on the relationship between right-wing populism and scapegoating and how that ends up, you know, involved in conspiratorial worldviews that take serious concerns about both government power and misconduct and corporate power and misconduct and send them off into the void. So, no, I still have my concerns, but I'm certainly willing to wait and listen and hope that economic nationalism does not devolve into the kind of scapegoating and conspiratorial xenophobia that Chuck Carter is infamous for.
Well, I'll go one more step, Chip. When you get your book finished, we want you to come on the air and we'll discuss and debate it.
Sounds good to me.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us and letting us in on what's going to be happening in July. Where should we look to in the radio network around the country to find these programs? Is it going to just be on?
You'll find us on AudioNet and present. We have 300 affiliates that will be carrying and. Hopefully that will increase dramatically by the fall.
Pat Choate, do you have a website address?
No, we can be found on AudioNet now, but we will be establishing a WebNet site, and we will have a mall, and we'll have it arranged where people can pick up the show there.
We want to thank you all for joining us, Pat Choate, Chip Berlay, and Jim Hightower. You're listening to Democracy Now! Call us on our hotline at 202-588-0988, extension 313. That's our comment line, 202-588-0988, extension 313. We'd also like to hear from you in all different ways. You can also write to us, email at democracy@pacifica.org, democracy@pacifica.org.
Baby, just keep it clean, but real mean. You're on spinning out.
Democracy Now! Is produced by Julie Drizin, with help from Pat Greenfield. Our engineer is Kenneth Mason. Again, we look forward to hearing from you at 202-588-0988, extension 313. And thank you for listening. Next week, we'll look at the Labor Party and Indonesia and President Clinton. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening.